Hi, I'm Brianna Contreras, Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive.
Hello, I'm Peter Werwein. I'm Senior Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive.
Welcome to MHE Talks, Improving Patient Access, a new podcast series part of our Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast from Managed Healthcare Executive.
Patient access is a challenge that everyone in healthcare seems to have been talking about for decades. It's one of those big tent problems of American healthcare. A topic that takes in everything from practical problems like transportation to a doctor's appointment, or maybe in today's telehealth era, spotty Wi-Fi. There are also financial barriers to access, such as high out-of-pocket costs, and structural barriers, such as deeply rooted healthcare disparities and racism.
Our new podcast, MHE Talks, Improving Patient Access, will feature healthcare leaders and executives who are working to pull down the barriers to patient access. The goal is to have a lively, informative conversation about a foundational issue in American healthcare.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Peter Werwein, and I'm Senior Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. Today, I'm speaking to Jack Linehan at Epstein, Becker, and Green. He's an expert on copay accumulators and maximizers. We've talked to Jack before about this knotty subject. He's something of an expert. We wanted to check in with him again. So thanks for the time today.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Peter.
So there are going to be people who listen to this and or watch it who are not familiar with copay accumulators and maximizers. So could you give us a quick thumbnail sketch of these programs?
Sure. So just to back up a little bit, I think it's important first just to understand a little bit about how manufacturer coupons work, or copay coupons. So drug manufacturers, particularly branded drug manufacturers, use copay coupons to facilitate access for patients to certain types of drugs that are reimbursed in the commercial setting. And beneficiaries can use coupons at the pharmacy point of sale to cover their out-of-pocket costs and therefore better receive the drug. But also at the same time, historically, those coupon payments have counted against the beneficiary's out-of-pocket obligations. So that would include their deductible and out-of-pocket limits. So the result of that is that the beneficiary not only receives the drug, but also is able to progress through the benefit parameters of his or her plan. However, plans and PBMs have long been very much opposed to the use of coupons, and they argue that they undermine the mechanisms that they use, including the deductible and out-of-pocket limit. They use those mechanisms to try to control costs and really to incentivize more cost-effective utilization in drug selection. And so they say that coupons very much damage those abilities. Now, historically, there wasn't too much that plans and PBMs could do to counter coupons because they didn't have a lot of insight into when they were being used at the pharmacy. But because of certain technological developments in more recent years, they have started to be able to identify when coupons are applying at the pharmacy in certain circumstances. Based upon that technological development, plans, PBMs, they've developed what's called copay accumulators. Copay accumulators is a mechanism which they use to prevent the value of the coupon from counting against the deductible or the out-of-pocket limit. The beneficiary can still use the coupon, but they will not advance through the benefit parameters. And so that is an accumulator. A closely related program is called the copay maximizer. And there, the plan or PBM is able to, what they do is they increase the drug copay amount that the beneficiary has to pay. so that the copay approximates the coupon's monthly value, and then the total value of the coupon is then applied evenly throughout the benefit year, but again, is not applied or it does not count against the deductible or out-of-pocket limit.
So let's just go through a hypothetical. So I'm using a coupon that covers my copay and co-insurance. Without an accumulator, I'm not seeing that cost, and it's counting towards my deductible. But with an accumulator, that the $25 that I'm not paying or the $50 that I'm not paying doesn't count towards my deductible. So why have these proved to be so controversial, and how do they affect patient access to expensive drugs? Mm-hmm. Who benefits? Who's put at a disadvantage by virtue of these accumulators and maximizers?
Sure. So the development of accumulators and maximizers has had it's been a game changer in this space, especially in the coupon space. And it's had pretty important and far-reaching cost-shifting implications for stakeholders. Without question, plans very much benefit from the use of these accumulators because what they're able to do is really leverage the value, not just of the coupon itself, but also they're still holding the beneficiary responsible for deductible payments and so forth. So they're able to gather value from both of these sources and thereby reduce their overall financial liability. On the other hand, accumulators have become very controversial because they can, in certain circumstances, have negative impacts for beneficiaries in terms of drug access, particularly in a situation where a beneficiary has not yet paid down his or her deductible. And the way this can sort of play out is a beneficiary has a coupon and is using it for the first several months of the plan year. And then all of a sudden, that person has exhausted the value of that coupon. And then they realize, sometimes abruptly and perhaps without sufficient notice, that they then have to pay down what could be a pretty steep deductible in order to keep getting access to that drug. And because of that abrupt change, some beneficiaries find that they have to stop taking the drug halfway through the year. And that can, of course, hurt their adherence to a treatment plan. Now, maximizers do not always present these sorts of problems, and so therefore have not been as controversial. With a maximizer, you don't tend to see this sort of situation where halfway through a year, a beneficiary suddenly has to pay a deductible. So there has been less concern there. And I think that's one of the reasons why, while both accumulators and maximizers, their use has increased in recent years among plans and PBMs, there has been a sort of trend to go a little bit more towards the maximizer because they're not quite as controversial. Nevertheless, manufacturers, patient advocacy groups are very much organized and against accumulators and maximizers, and they complain that they're often being used without appropriate notice and that it can hurt drug adherence. But again, on the other hand, plans, PBMs have arguments that their job is to manage costs and that they have mechanisms like deductibles, out-of-pocket limits, which are structured to, you know, encourage more cost-effective utilization and drug selection, and that these coupons are undermining them. And so they're using accumulators and maximizers to enforce those plan mechanisms.
So from the patient point of view, the accumulator experience might go something like this, that I have the coupon, I'm not facing those out-of-pocket costs, I exhaust the value of the coupon, I don't know what the value tends to be, And all of a sudden, bam, I have a hefty co-payment, co-insurance cost, and I have to shoulder that till I hit my deductible and might be caught totally unaware.
Well, right. So what typically you have to pay your deductible first,
right,
before
right.
the plan benefits kick in. And so the deductibles can really be difficult in particular because there's no plan benefits at that point, right? So you could get all the way till May or June and you're getting a drug, everything's fine. And then boom, you're hit with a deductible. If you can't pay that deductible, you're not getting coverage for that drug effectively. And so for some of those individuals, they have a lot of difficulty there, and for certain of them have had to drop their treatment.
Right. So what has CMS or HHS and more generally and the federal government done to mm-hmm. regulate accumulator programs?
Mm-hmm. So sort of to frame this a little bit, it's important to realize that coupons themselves have long been prohibited by the federal government under the fraud and abuse statutes. They provide that coupons cannot be used under the federal healthcare program. So, you know, coupons, accumulators, none of these issues even come up for conversation when we're talking about Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE, et cetera. But coupons have been prevalent in the commercial space. They're a very, very critical tool being used by drug manufacturers. And there really had not been, you know, so many of these things are of recent development. So accumulators and maximizers really started to pick up speed a few years ago. At the time, there was no federal rules or regulations that specifically addressed this issue. Until last year in 2019, CMS issued a final rule that would have pretty heavily restricted the use of accumulators and maximizers. However, in this year, in May of this year, they issued a new final rule that really represented a 180 sort of policy reversal, in which CMS has come forward and said that plans are permitted but not required to use accumulators and maximizers as they see fit. You know, and under the circumstances. So one of the reasons that CMS had given for allowing such latitude to plans and PBMs was that their position is that there are other rules out there where a plan, certain types of plans may in fact need to use an accumulator. And so that it would be inconsistent for the government to say, no, you cannot. So the example they had given is that the IRS rules governing high deductible health plans that are being structured for eligibility with health savings accounts, that there's the IRS position that those plans have to prevent coupons from applying in the pre-deductible phase. So in essence, that these types of plans have to use accumulators. And so CMS wanted to give more latitude to plans to be able to comply with those rules and also with separate state laws, some of which restrict the use of accumulators. So ultimately,
To sum up, if I'm understanding you correctly, in 2019, it looked like the federal government was going to intervene in this area and start to regulate maximizers, accumulators and maximizers. But by virtue of trying to make it some consistency with IRS rules for high deductible plans, they reversed course this spring, and the effect is that the federal government and CMS and HHS have decided with this latest rule not to regulate accumulators and maximizers very much, if at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So you've really seen a trend at the federal level to pull back upon any sort of rules that would sort of micromanage in this space. That having been said, however, a little over a month ago in October of this year, the government issued a final rule that would impose pretty wide-ranging transparency requirements for plans. And many of these rules include disclosure requirements relating to cost sharing. And one of those rules in particular would require plans to disclose whether any patient financial assistance or other third-party payments, whether they count them against the cost-sharing obligations. And so in essence, what that creates is a practical requirement that plans have to disclose whether or not they in fact have an accumulator or maximizer. So, you know, that is a significant step because it does create for the first time a bright line disclosure rule. But I don't think that the significance of that rule should be sort of overstated because most sophisticated plans and PBMs already do provide some sort of disclosure about their maximizers and accumulators. And that's for reasons of trying to comply or mitigate legal risk in relation to other rules. You know, that could be ERISA disclosure requirements, anti-discrimination, consumer protection rules. So it was already in their interest to make some sort of disclosure here. But new plans, smaller plans, employer groups, and so forth that are starting to use these mechanisms should be on notice now that they may need to properly disclose their use of these programs.
Yeah, it seems like lack of disclosure was at least one element here that this rule addressed, and at least the element of surprise is taken out of the programs.
Right, but a lot of it has to do with sort of the nature of your disclosure, because the new federal rule transparency requirement really just says whether you have an accumulator or not. It doesn't say much in terms of sort of the nature, the substance of that disclosure. And that can still be important when you start looking at other legal considerations. That is, how fulsome should that disclosure really be? And that's an issue that plans will need to grapple with.
Well, I'd also like to talk to you about a proposed rule in that came out in June that would apparently modify the treatment of manufacturer coupons with respect to the Medicaid best price rules. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the extent of my understanding. So maybe for this, for the listeners and the viewers out there, you sort of explain what that rule is about and how it will affect coupons and maybe also the accumulator programs.
Yeah, sure. So at the outset, I want to emphasize that is a proposed rule. So that's not currently the law, but it could become the law in some sort of form. But this would definitely have a pretty substantial impact on the compliance landscape. And so CMS, as you noted, issued a proposed rule in June of this year, and that would have revised the treatment of manufacturer patient assistance. So that could be coupons or other forms of assistance, and how that is treated under the best price rules of the Medicaid drug rebate program. So historically, drug coupons and other forms of patient assistance have been generally excluded from the calculation of best price as long as that assistance is structured in a certain way by the manufacturer that it meets certain criteria. Now, best price is important, of course, because it is used to determine the amount of rebates that a manufacturer must pay to the government in order to participate in the Medicaid program. So in the proposed rule, what CMS would be changing is that they would be saying that in order to still qualify for that exception from best price, the coupon or other assistance, all of it, the entire value of it has to be only directed at the beneficiary. And then on top of that, the government is arguing that when you have a scenario where a plan or PBM is applying an accumulator, that they contend that the value of the coupon is not 100% going to the beneficiary. Instead, the plan or PBM is sort of extracting some of that value. So, as a result of this rule, if it was to be finalized, manufacturers first would have to identify the circumstances in which a plan or PBM is applying a accumulator to block the coupon from applying. And then in those situations would need to make sure that the value of that particular coupon is not excluded from best price, but instead included in best price. And when coupons are included into best price, the result is that the manufacturers ultimately have to pay a higher rebate amount to the government. So the net effect is to increase their financial liability under the Medicaid drug rebate program. So manufacturer stakeholders have noted in response to this proposed rule that, first of all, there's a real practical issue here, and that is it's very difficult, perhaps even impossible, for a manufacturer to determine in every situation where a plan or PBM may be applying an accumulator. So a lot of times there's no publicly available information. So that can really just be a real difficulty there to identify when they apply. So given that difficulty, I would think that manufacturers, many would take different sort of course of action. One may be that the manufacturers would say, well, given the legal risks of not being able to comply with the best price rules, they may just take the presumption that an accumulator is applying, and therefore all their coupons would, be included into best price, and they would have to sort of take that financial hit. Another sort of behavioral reaction could be that some manufacturers may say, given the risks and given the increased financial liability, we may just decrease the amount of patient assistance that we offer in the market. So those are, two potential outcomes that could result in. And in the meantime, plans would be even further empowered by this sort of rule. They would have even more flexibility to use accumulators in these sort of circumstances. And so, it'll be interesting to sort of see what happens here. There is an irony here too, because if this proposed rule was to be finalized, I think it could lower the amount of financial assistance that's being offered on the market. And in turn, it could also increase or promote further plan adoption of accumulators. And there's an irony there, because CMS has at times expressed some concern about the impact in some situations of accumulators to beneficiaries. So this could have really the opposite effect. So there's a lot of money at stake here. So it'll be important to, really monitor what happens with this proposed rule and this proposed change to best price, and whether or not it will in fact be finalized.
Yeah, will it in fact be finalized? Presumably with a new administration, given that it's a proposed rule, isn't it very likely that it will not come to be, or if it does, it will not come to be for quite some time? Or is there a sort of a clock ticking, and it can only stay proposed for so long? And
I think there's a lot of discussion. This is one of many rules that have has come out of the government, particularly from CMS and HHS recently, that would look to reform pretty drastically certain areas of drug policy and law. So there's a lot of discussion about what will be further carried forward by the new administration. I think it's pretty difficult to speculate on a lot of these. It's important to realize that I think the new administration is also very keen on some pretty substantial reform. I think it's even more difficult when you look at the accumulator space, because this is a pretty unique sort of area of the law. There really are trade-offs on both sides of the issue. So it's a more complicated sort of niche area, and therefore I think it's even harder to speculate on what's going to happen here. Stakeholders will definitely need to monitor it closely.
Yes. Yeah, so the last thing I wanted to discuss with you is leaving Washington and looking at state action on accumulators. In the piece that you wrote for Managed Healthcare Executive, you discussed how patient groups, some provider organizations, have been pretty active in state capitals and with some success in moving ahead with regulations that rein in accumulators, and I guess to some extent maximizers, in a way that hasn't happened in Washington. So maybe you could just, without going through state by state, highlight a few states where some law or regulations have gone into effect or may go into effect, and whether there's a common thread to what the states are doing.
Yeah, sure. So like we discussed earlier, at the federal level, there's really been a trend towards allowing plans and PBMs more latitude to have, implement these sort of accumulator maximizer programs. But at the state level, at least a handful of states have really gone in the opposite direction. So specifically, there are five states, Arizona, Georgia, Illinois, Virginia, and West Virginia, that have all implemented laws that would heavily restrict and pretty much prohibit the use of accumulators and maximizers for beneficiaries within their state, at least for fully insured plans. These laws, the language of the laws, that they have a good amount of similarity to them. They're clearly based upon each other. A lot of the legislatures are watching each other and the nature of their laws. And what most of them say is that a plan has to make sure that any payment made by a beneficiary or on behalf of a beneficiary must count against the plan's deductible and out-of-pocket limits. And that's significant because coupons, of course, are a payment originally by a manufacturer that's made on behalf of the patient. So the reality, the real effect of these laws and the intention of these laws is to prevent plans from using accumulators and maximizers. So that's sort of the general similarity, but there are some kind of interesting differences in some of the terms that are being used in these provisions. So it is important to look at each state law very closely. For example, some of the states' laws do have exceptions to cover instances, say, where there may be a generic that's also available. But other laws do not have an exception. Some of them refer to only drugs covered under the pharmacy benefit, whereas others refer both to drugs covered under the pharmacy and medical benefit. And that can be significant because some plans are starting to explore how to apply accumulators to drugs covered under the medical benefit. Finally, some of the laws only refer to plans, whereas other ones refer to both plans and PBMs. But nevertheless, if you're a plan and you're contracted with the PBM and you're subject to that law, the plan would need to make sure that the PBM similarly complies with any such restriction. So, you know, that's sort of a summary at the very basic level of what these laws are doing. But one of the most important things to remember is that these state laws would only apply to fully insured plans. So due to ERISA preemption, they would not apply to self-insured plans, which of course make up a substantial part of the commercial market. The other thing too is that while five states, you know, we talk about a handful of states, that might not sound like a lot, but it's important to realize that these laws have only come up in the last year or two, and around 20 state legislatures have considered a bill or are currently considering a bill to restrict these sorts of programs. And they are receiving there's a good amount of bipartisan support in some of these state legislatures. I believe it's a trend that's going on right now. And I think one can expect that an additional number of states will ultimately pass some of these restrictions. So what you're starting to see is differences at the federal and state level, trends going in the different directions, and the result is a more complicated coupon compliance landscape. So, you know, stakeholders are really going to need to get appropriate expertise, you know, try to navigate these sometimes inconsistent laws. It's just a very quickly evolving area right now. So whatever the state of play is right now, that could very much change by next year at some point.
And, you know, pity the poor civilian, the poor patient who tries to figure this out. Is there any interesting legal question about whether the states have the authority to make these rules? Is there any sort of, question of state authority in this realm, or does this fall safely into the long-established framework that states can regulate insurers that as long as ERISA doesn't apply?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm not aware of any legal challenges to any of these laws or really any discussion around it. I would think on the surface that states do have appropriate authority under their insurance powers to they can regulate local insurance and fully insured plans and cost sharing, formulary requirements, these sorts of things. I mean, that does fall within the traditional purview of state law. There have been questions about the extent to which plans can regulate PBMs and so forth and their interaction with their plans. And that is being addressed by the Supreme Court right now. I think most of these laws, they really are primarily focused upon the plans themselves. They are very much focused on this one issue. I don't think that they're overbroad. But who knows? Again, it's a very controversial area. A lot of money at stake. So I would expect the unexpected to happen in the next year or two.
Thanks for listening, and keep an eye out for the next episode of MHE Talks, Improving Patient Access. This podcast is a series part of our Tuning into the C-Suite podcast and can be found at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com, as well as on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Apple Podcasts.